It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 hey. Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, you heard the man. Sal Capaccio is on the Wester Hotline with us here now. Nate Geary sitting in for Mike Shope today. I am the Bulldog. Glad to have you along for the ride with us. And Sal, Hard Knocks tonight. We'll get to the Kyren Williams contract and if it means anything to James Cook and some of the national reporting. We touched on a little bit of it yesterday. But Hard Knocks, I know this is a show that it's football content, so I'm guessing you've been a big fan of it all these years. How cool is it to you that the Bills are being featured in Hard Knocks?
It's super cool from one standpoint that, like, they're the team that everybody's going to be talking about, all eyes on them. They're relevant enough for that to happen, right? But at another point, it does kind of bring into, okay, what are the pitfalls here? What are the distractions that could derail them from what their ultimate goals are? And to be honest with you, they already have a lot of, you know, I guess, eyeballs on them all the time. Do they really need something like this? I think about, you know, what I said this morning, Bulldog, and when I was on, you know, doing the Extra Point show is, I already see a lot of the stuff people are going to see on Hard Knocks. I don't see everything. I'm not saying that, but you know, right, when they're going to be talking about all the stuff on the field and the interactions, like, we as beat reporters, we see this every day. This isn't going to be new to us, right? So I think for me, I'm a tough person to ask because it's not going to shed any light on that stuff to me. But I will be interested in a lot of the off-field stuff that I don't get to see, that we're not privy to, and what they're going to be doing inside the dorm rooms and things like that. So I think there's such a different kind of perspective you get depending on what your lens you see the team is
through. Yeah, I like that answer. How noticeable has their presence been at camp so far?
Actually, so the presence has been very noticeable, but they're not intrusive whatsoever. Mm. They're actually great to work with, to be around, even to talk to once in a while. Like, you don't bother them necessarily, but if you have a question, they're very willing. Pat Harris is actually from Rochester. He's one of the main directors. He's been on WGR and WBEN. He's making the rounds, explaining a lot of the stuff that's going on. It's really cool. Got to meet him a little and talk to him a little bit. But, you know, for the most part, you see them, you see the blue shirts, you see the blue T-shirts, Hard Knocks with the Buffalo Bills, HBO. You see the boom mics, you see the video cameras. But honestly, because it's training camp and there's cameras everywhere, you don't really notice them that much. John Scott, who came on today, WGRZ Channel 2, he has a different perspective than me because he's a TV guy and he's carrying a camera, right? And he said because he's a video guy and he's carrying a camera, he kind of notices them a little bit more than I might because I just see all these cameras around. That's normal.
Just another TV station, right?
Yeah. That's exactly right. Now, John, because he does TV and that's a competitive environment, he's noticing more cameras and more things that they might be shooting that maybe because there's so many, right? Like, each TV outlet here in Buffalo's got one, maybe two cameras, but one camera who's watching something. Hard Knocks has, you know, 25 of them, and they're getting all this different stuff that they're shooting out there.
And I'm guessing that they're not as limited in what they can shoot, whereas the TV stations, there are some limitations, are there not?
Yes. No. They it's a good question. No, they do not shoot the periods that we don't shoot, I don't believe. Like, I'm okay. I'm not seeing them shoot 11 on 11. You know what I mean?
Okay, that's gotcha.
I have to go back and think in my head, but, like, I would probably notice if they were doing more of that.
Okay, I gotcha. Is there a player that you would bet on that it's, like, not, you know, top of mind for the fan base? Mine is Steven Gosnell, the receiver out of Virginia Tech. I think his story is really compelling. Tore his knee up in their last game in the 23 season, rehabbed like crazy, was back to play in 24, went undrafted, caught the big long touchdown. The first long touchdown pass, I think, of camp was to him. And I feel like that's a guy that is, like, ready-made for the Hard Knock story because, you know, he's a long shot to make the team, but it's a compelling story. So that's my pick for, like, a dark horse guy whose name, you know, most fans would be like, who's that guy? Do you have an idea for someone that might fit that profile?
Do I have to pick a guy who's more lesser known?
No.
Because I think the guy that fits all of this is Tre'Davious White. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more of a redemption story than it is what you just described, right? Yep. Like, this is a veteran who, you know, had these two major injuries. It really impacted him, you know, professionally and personally. We know that, the struggles he went through as well. He got released by this team, went to two different teams, played this team in the playoffs last year to go to the AFC Championship game. Now he's suddenly back. And oh, by the way, after they sign him, they draft a first-round cornerback to maybe play over top of him. Now that cornerback is hurt. Now it's obviously part of the storyline that you couldn't predict. And then here's Tre'Davious White, this gregarious personality who really fits the camera. I think Tre'Davious White is perfect for the storyline of Hard Knocks.
Sal, how much do you think, and I do wonder, I don't know if you know this or if anyone really knows this, like what the cutoff time is for like what they're showing this week versus episode two versus episode three.
I don't
three.
Know. It's a good question.
Did I ask you this yesterday? I think I did.
Like, because I'm...
I don't know if you asked me, right. but Nate, I think I did talk about it today. I wondered out loud today too. Like, do we see the injury to Harrison? I think we do. But do we see the James Cook holding?
Yeah,
that's the thing that I'm wondering. I don't know if that gets into this episode. It might. Look, the technology they have now is amazing, this turnaround time they have with all these things that they're filming and the audio, and they can get this really turned around really, really quickly. So I would not be surprised if it's something at the end that they don't go too far in, but it's a great teaser for the next
episode. Storm clouds or something, right? Brewing, right? Like that's Owen made the same point to me because I asked him, like, do you know, if you heard or read? Because I feel like at some point I did see, like, whether it's like Friday or Saturday is like a cutoff for a Tuesday episode, but I can't say 100% that that's right. So I wondered kind of the same thing when I brought this up to Owen. He said, oh, it'll just be the thing at the end. You know, it'll be like, you know, everything's been going great all episode with James Cook, but now dun, dun, dun. Right? Here's some dark clouds and some thunder or whatever. That seems like something that we should at least see that, if not more than that, because again, we're not sure when there is a cutoff. So I'm curious just how I did read today about who did you mentioned the name of the director that's in charge. That's
Pat Harris.
Pat Harris, yep. Yeah. I read a profile with him from, I think it was Sal Majorana, that I read about him, and how, like, when McDermott found out that the guy grew up in Rochester and he came to training camp, you know, as a fan years ago, felt like, okay, he understands, you know, how we do this and what's important to Bills fans, and, like, felt a lot more comfortable, I think, with the idea that the guy would have, you know, maybe better intentions than someone who wasn't a Bills fan growing up might have. Because I think that's absolutely a thing organizationally you want to try to avoid, right? Is nobody wants to look stupid in this thing.
No, but the Bills have content control here too. I mean, the Bills are going to have say over what gets aired. And I think quite a bit of say, actually. So I think, you know, they're going to try to protect themselves, of course. And I think they would want what you said is completely right, which is they're not going to want to have anything out there that makes them look foolish in any way, shape, or form. But B, they don't want proprietary information out there, right? Meaning things that, you know, they believe are competitive advantages for them, things that they do, things that they say, words, the way that they run certain drills or meetings. I think all of those things have to be kind of, I don't know, negotiated or talked about, and what Hard Knocks wants. So sure, like, you're not going to want to show, I think, the juicy stuff. I think, you know, back in years past when Hard Knocks first started, and HBO kind of had control over everything back then. Maybe they didn't. Maybe it was very little for the team.
Yeah.
But it was like, let's get to the juicy storylines and let's get it out there. And yeah, you want to highlight some really cool stuff, but then there comes a time where it's going to be about, you know, some negativity that's out there, and people latched onto that. I think because of the blowback of certain, you know, seasons and episodes and things that have happened, and the way teams can kind of structure their own, like embedded or whatever else they have going on, you know, that's become something different. And I think because of really what happened last year with the Giants too, that's even become more aware. Like, HBO and NFL Films wants teams to want to be on Hard Knocks. Nobody wants to be, because of those things that happened. So that's why they kind of had to expand the rules. And they chose the Bills. And I do want to reiterate here that Hard Knocks chose the Bills. The Bills did not choose Hard Knocks, right? Like, the Bills did not want to be on Hard Knocks. It doesn't mean they're not a workable partner.
Right, and cooperative and whatever. But yeah,
right, exactly. From everything I've heard, from everything I've seen, it's been a really good relationship between the two sides. But don't forget, the Bills did not want to do this.
You know, Sal, I won't pretend that you know the, you know, complexities of, you know, anything more than what we've been, what's been reported, or even to know what James Cook is thinking here. But we had been, you know, talking, I know you talked about this a little this morning too, just like kind of the confusing aspect of showing up to camp, starting camp, and then 8 days in deciding to hold in. I'm wondering, in your opinion, because again, I don't know that you would know anything that he's thinking or his agent's thinking, but I would be, if I were a betting man, which sometimes I am, I'm not sure we see a, you know, hold in from James Cook if the Hard Knocks cameras aren't around. It just, I don't know, and maybe that's just where my head is, and maybe you'll think differently on this sale, but I'm having, guys, I think a little of it too is like I'm trying to figure out what the game plan here is, because it doesn't seem like there's a cohesive one from his side, or at least like if you're going to have a plan to hold in, wouldn't you have done it day one and not played eight practices and risk injury and now, you know, kind of say, well, this is a business decision. Well, what changed in the first, you know, week and a half of practice to now?
It's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. All I can do is speculate. Hard Knocks could very well be a piece of it. Well, you know what? There's cameras there. Let's make a statement. Let's get on there and let's show everybody we mean business. Maybe his agent decided that. There also could be the fact that he's seen a bunch of injuries around the team.
Yeah.
Right? And I respect that, which is, hey, you know, we've seen a rash of injuries here. The agent goes, no, I don't want you to be the next one, man. Like, you know, you're trying to have this contract. Look at these guys. Khalil Shakir's out week to week. Max Harrison, look what happened to him. Like, it happened right after those two injuries, mm-hmm. right? And where he decided this. That could be something that plays into it. It could be that he showed up. They did it out of good faith and said, hey, we're going to show up. We're going to negotiate. Let's get this thing ball rolling. Maybe it just never progressed to the point where they felt comfortable enough. And he said, his agent said, you know what? We're going to have to make a stand now. We're going to stand on business and say, this isn't, we're going to have to do something to show you that we're not happy, because obviously what we've done so far has not gotten us to move the needle a little bit. I think it could be a whole number of things, to be honest with you. I don't know. I agree with you. I'm confused on it because we don't know anything about that. Maybe at some point, James Cook will tell us, whether that's when he has a contract or doesn't, or however this gets resolved. You know, I mean, maybe James Cook will tell us, you know, why he decided to do it on day number 9 of training camp.
And that's why, Sal, I don't know that I'm buying the Russini and Pelissero and Rapoport reports that, well, this thing's actually really close, and maybe this is why. That to me, Jay, that wouldn't really line up with, I think I agree more with you that this is more of a, this isn't going the way we want to. It's more so getting further apart. And then, you know, as we said, Brandon Bean, I can't imagine too many times is going to Russini and Rapoport and dropping nuggets to them. That's usually coming from the agent's side, right? At least historically.
I agree with that. You know, what do you guys always talk about, Mike and Chris? What do you always talk about, Bulldog, which is who is benefiting by having information?
Yeah. Exactly, right.
What's the answer to that? It's the agent here, right? I would think.
Because I think the agent and the player would think, like, you know, for whatever it's worth, I mean, you got to play whatever card you've got. And a card they have is to start this hold-in now and then get reporters saying it's close. I think when fans hear reporters indicating that something is close, then the pressure reverts to the team. Like, normally, the fans, very curiously to me, usually side with the team in any contract squabble. They love the players, but the minute a guy wants to get paid, then it's trouble time, you know, especially if he's got an existing contract, etc., right? You signed it, all that sort of stuff. But you start to hear that it's close, and then I think a fan would go, oh, come on, Bills. Right? He scored 16 touchdowns. Figure it
out.
Just
do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I don't know. I think we did get into this yesterday with you, Sal. I did. Like, I don't mean to impugn the reporting of any of the people that Nate mentioned, right? You know, but I would wonder where it's coming from, too. Because Bean, not that he usually isn't, you know, like, very close to the vest anyways, but he didn't sound really any different to my ears yesterday than he did in April talking about this.
Agreed. It sounded very similar to everything he said all the way back to the combine and the owners meetings in February and March. And then, of course, we get to April and there's, you know, workouts. And that's when he spoke again about James not being there. And he's had the same messaging consistently throughout, which is, we love James Cook. He always says it. He always starts with, we love Jimbo. We love James Cook. We want him here a long time. We want to keep him in a Buffalo Bills uniform. It takes two to make an agreement. And what does he always else does he say? Which is, when you have a quarterback, you're paying the money you're paying him, and the offensive tackles and edge rusher. Like, you have to somehow figure out where to spend a lot of your resources and allocations. And, you know, obviously they haven't been able to work that out. And he says it takes two. When he says it takes two, that's kind of a signal to me that we think we've come up to where we need to come up to. They haven't been able to do that on their part. So it's business. And Brandon Bean doesn't begrudge James Cook for wanting more money. He doesn't begrudge James Cook for, mm-hmm. Doing what he, trying to make as much money as possible. He understands the way the business works. But it was interesting. He also said, this is my ninth year and it's the first time this has happened. So it's disappointing for me. He used those words. So I think Brandon Bean is obviously disappointed that James Cook is not on the field right now.
Right. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline with us for just a few more minutes. The Bills back to it tomorrow. Who will we hear from tomorrow? Are we going to get McDermott? Because the preseason game is looming on Saturday. And I feel like the next time he talks is going to be the time that people are going to start asking him about playing time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What was the exact question? I'm sorry. Just about, do we know about playing time? Is that what you asked me? I'm sorry.
No, will we find out about playing time tomorrow? Is McDermott talking tomorrow? If he's not, then I don't think we will. But
this has gone different ways in years past, Bulldog. Sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we do this week. Sometimes we don't find out until basically the night before, maybe in a production meeting, but that's really proprietary information just so we can prepare for a broadcast. Sometimes you find out the morning of, sometimes we don't find out until they hit the field. Like, I'm not kidding. It's gone a different way a lot of times. So, we don't know. He did say the other day that, he was still undecided on if Josh Allen will play. So we'll see. They did put out a depth chart today. I don't know if you guys saw that. They did put out a depth chart today.
I did. You know, the thing I know, I've been looking at an Our Lads depth chart all through camp here that had Elijah Moore listed behind Josh Palmer on the depth chart. Today, he was behind Khalil Shakir on the depth chart. Mm-hmm. on the Bills depth chart. That was interesting. Like, while Shakir is out, does that indicate an opportunity for Elijah Moore to work in the slot and see if that's where he can carve out a role, as a complement to Shakir or something? Obviously, he's not going to supplant Shakir if he's healthy as this team's slot receiver, but I kind of wonder about that.
Yeah, it's a good observation. I wonder as well. They have also KJ Hamler listed there. Jalen Virgil's an outside guy. I think he has a little bit of slot flexibility there. Curtis Samuel's listed outside, but he's not going to, I can imagine he'd be ready to play by Saturday. He hasn't practiced in a while. That's the other part about this, which is, how many guys have to play? All the guys that are missing that have been out. Even if Josh Allen plays, at least you do have your entire offensive line intact, except for Spencer Brown. You're going to put Spencer Brown out there after, 3 days of practice? I'm not sure. So, you would put Josh out there. You'd have probably Ryan Vandermark or Tylan Grable, which is fine, but you don't have to think about these things if you're Sean McDermott, who's available to you and what the ripple effect is around the team. So, it's going to be really interesting. One of the big things I noticed about the depth chart is they actually have a backup kicker, number 22, Ray Davis.
Right. Off of his outstanding performance at the return of the blue and red practice.
And is this a spot where I can am I allowed to tell everybody in Shoreway that Brandon Codrington is listed as the main punt returner and kick returner?
Right.
Am I allowed here?
I mean it's your time, Sal.
Okay. No surprise, but we know how I feel about that, which is I've never felt him being in danger to make the team. Certainly anything is possible and it could come down to that. And, because of the injuries, they could have to save a roster spot at some point. But I've always felt Brandon Codrington was on this team as the punt returner, and he would be one of the two kick returners. And they have LaVisca Chenault listed as the second kick returner here. And then, yesterday's injury to Bale Inspector, guys, he has a calf injury now, and we've all said it, which is the availability has been an issue for Bale Inspector. And Bale Inspector is listed as a backup will linebacker. I got to go back and say this. The Bills have three linebackers listed on their depth chart.
They do,
They also have a nickel corner in Taron Johnson. They have 12 guys listed on defense. They have three linebackers and a nickel corner. So I think that's really interesting. And Bale Inspector is listed behind Dorian Williams, who's the third linebacker behind Milano and Bernard. But I think now, with everything that's happened, I think the door is wide open for Joe Andreessen to absolutely just smash it down to be the backup Mike.
I also think it's interesting that Chenault is listed as the third guy on the punt return depth chart because
he's never
returned a punt. I don't don't even know if he did it in college. That doesn't mean he can't be working on it in training camp here, obviously, to see if he could do it, but he's never returned a single punt in the NFL. So he is not...
Right. Or college, I don't think.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I'm pretty sure that's right, too. Yeah. So like that is not someone who I would expect a team with Super Bowl aspirations to be trusting with their punt return job. You know, he'd have to make it as a receiver / kick returner, and I mean, I don't know, it's a pretty crowded
field.
The
only person that people brought up to me that I could give a little bit of, okay, I could see it if it gets to that, would be Elijah Moore, because Elijah Moore's done it, and if you have to find a spot, and because of the injuries, like, hey, we're gonna keep this guy.
Right.
But again, I don't know how much that has to impact. I think Codrington's kind of in his own boat. It's like, look, this is the guy that does this, and he's really good at it, and we're going to keep him on the team. And whatever else happens, other positions happen in other positions, but this is the guy we're keeping in this spot.
Sal, I meant to ask you, and I made a note to make sure I asked you today on Sunday when I was there, when we were sitting down, I wanted to ask you about it. It just slipped my mind. Watching and kind of going through some of the practice notes from, you know, Matt Perino, the other beat writers, and then seeing some stuff at Cover One and Anthony Prochaska, who's been like basically at every practice, without asking you to tell us too much about like the stuff you're not supposed to tell us about. I guess broadly wanted to ask you is, have you noticed or have you felt the presence of Ryan Nielsen being a part of this defensive coaching staff in some of the things you're seeing them try to do defensively that might be different this year than the last couple of years and even last year under Bobby Babbitt? You're still running Sean McDermott's defense. That, I guess where I'm coming from is the excitement of some of the blitz packages and what they're showing pre to post snap is a little bit more into Nielsen's background, which is, you know, 5-6 guys lining up at the line of scrimmage and you don't know who's coming and who's going and the simulated blitzes and all that. Like, have you noticed that out there? Like, this new coach that comes from a blitzing background, have you noticed that presence out there and what they're trying to do?
Yes. I would say more so, though, not as much that, which I have noticed that. And by the way, it can go both ways. They did one of those deals you're talking about the other day, and Keon Coleman got loose on a busted coverage because they came off the corner. And like that's what you risk when you do that. But yes, I mean that you want to see that. You gotta play with that stuff now. That's why you do it, right?
Yep.
Which is fine. I'm not criticizing at all. I'm just saying that it can be risky to do that stuff. He's not calling the defense. Bobby Babbitt is. But I do think that he has put his imprint on ways that you could move guys around. And maybe that's why we're seeing a little bit of a 3 linebacker depth chart, right?
Sure.
Maybe that's why that's happening. Here's where I really see Ryan Nielsen, though, when I watch him. And people have commented this to me who've been at practice that I know, which is, boy, he's really good at like showing guys where to place their hands, the teaching, the technique. He reminds me a lot of Aaron Cromer. Aaron Cromer is great at that. Like, Aaron Cromer is a great teacher. He's a great technician. Listen to any offensive lineman. Connor McGovern raves about him. All his offensive linemen do. Eric Wood will always say like how great of a teacher he is. I think Ryan Nielsen is cut from that cloth. Ryan Nielsen, he was working with Joey Bosa. Joey Bosa's put in time in this league.
Yeah,
in case
right.
you didn't know, he's right. really good at what he does, right? And like he was just working on really subtle things with Joey about his hands and how to turn his shoulders. And I'm like, that's a guy talking. Like, he's not afraid to talk to a guy who has put together, I guess, basically a Hall of Fame resume, right, without looking at it. But a guy that's one of the best in the league over a generation getting to the quarterback here. Like, that's a coach that's not afraid and not intimidated and not shy about teaching him. Because I always say Tiger Woods, even at the peak of his career, had a hitting coach, or had a golf coach. I mean, that's what you do. If you want to be better, people have to look at same things you're doing and saying, hey, we can do this better, we can do that better. And that's where I really like what I've seen from Ryan Nielsen.
Sal, thanks a lot for this. We got to go. I'll look forward to talking with you tomorrow.
You got it.
All right, that is Sal Capaccio. Training camp coverage here on WGR from St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. I want to pick up on the question you asked Sal about Ryan Nielsen and about this defense, maybe adding some wrinkles and facets that we haven't seen a lot of over the years with Sean McDermott and now Bobby Babbitt running the defense. So we'll get into that more as we go. Nate Geary is in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR. The Anthony Richardson offseason story arc has been pretty compelling. It's not our team. It's not a team that's really in the Bills' hair at all. They're not a contender. But, you know, this show, Mike and I were both big fans of him coming out in the draft.
Mike was a big fan of him.
Me too. I said I would have taken him 101 myself. So, yeah. I mean, you know. But shoulder soreness in the spring, and it sounds like maybe he's damaged in some permanent way, and just weird that the team is being so honest about it. Now he's starting the first preseason game. It feels like they have they've like rediscovered sanity, because Daniel Jones is a horrible idea. Anthony Richardson might also be a horrible idea, but
you shouldn't spend the fifth overall pick.
Continue seeing how horrible of an idea it could become by continuing to play him. I think you have to. The only problem there is the guy just so daffy, you know, to take himself out of a game and not understand why that's a problem. I've wondered this from the moment that happened. Not to overstate that one situation, that one decision that he made, but it's the kind of thing that makes you wonder, if he doesn't know how that works, how much other stuff within football that is assumed does he not understand? And that guy probably can't be your quarterback.
No, but I also think, like, you absolutely, without... I am not here thinking Daniel Jones is the next Sam Darnold. Like, that he's going to be one of these reclamation projects.
Me either.
The Geno Smiths of the world that were with bad organizations, and now they are finally in, somebody believes in him and stability and weapons, and boom, he's, you know, getting a $50 million contract over the next. Like, I don't see that with Daniel Jones. It just, he's not good. So if the Colts do decide Daniel Jones is our week one starter, that is, you should cut Anthony Richardson or trade him. Get anything for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because you declared it's over.
Yeah,
it's done.
Yeah.
So to your point, I think you have to basically do everything you can to see, even if it's 5 weeks, 6 weeks, can he work?
Yeah.
Because I think you owe it to the fans. I think you owe it as a franchise to say, we spent a huge...
Yeah.
And even a little bit of, like, how Carolina played the Bryce Young thing last year, I didn't agree with it at all. But it ended up turning out to be, I think, the one thing that sparked him. Now, I'll say this about Bryce Young. I don't know that there are a lot of young quarterbacks that would have handled it the way that he did. And a lot of that, he's coming from the Saban, and he's coming from that guy's been coached over the course of his career. He's not with Anthony Richardson. He just, to me, it's a lot like Trey Lance, where you just don't have a big enough body of work. And these organizations that take players like that, to not have the patience when you knew this guy had the second least amount of starts in the last 20 years to go in the top five at quarterback, like, that's on you, man. Like, you got to know. Mm-hmm. You have to come pre-packaged with a level of patience you wouldn't have with other players.
Right.
And San Francisco just immediately bailed on the whole Trey Lance idea. Like, it was just, he started one game in the mud, and then the next game he broke his leg, and they were like, yeah, this guy stinks. And it was like, well, what do you mean he stinks? You drafted him, handpicked, he played in one game, and he stinks? Come on. Like, and that's just what it was. Like, he just...
Well, it wasn't just that he stunk, but Brock Purdy showed up, and like that...
For sure, but...
That's it, so...
Even so, I'm still thinking, like, hey, Brock Purdy, you'll get your chance, man, but like, I need to just make sure that...
Yeah.
That guy isn't in there. And, you know, I think recency bias... across the league, especially a quarterback, you know, Anthony Richardson was selected because of Josh Allen's success.
Sure.
And Daniel Jones is probably got this opportunity, not because of what he's shown in the last 2 years, which has been one of the worst quarterbacks in the league,
but because of Sam Darnold. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The league always does that. I would go so far as to say that if Anthony Richardson hadn't turned into the disaster he's been the first 2 years in the league, that Jalen Milroe would have been a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
Like, he's that's him on paper. And he's got all the football acumen you could possibly want, right? The guy's like a coach's dream.
I really love
Jalen
Milroe.
But I think, you know, the accuracy problems, mechanics, all this stuff that got in the Josh Allen comp, just like, Anthony Richardson happened, no.
Big arm, like, runs.
I think Milroe's going to play this year at some point.
Do we?
Isn't it the way that's trending? Camp has been going really well for him, I think. Sorry, I love Jalen Milroe.
Christmas gift? Or is it a Jalen Milroe jersey?
We could do that.
Yeah.
We could definitely do that.
That means a Seahawks jersey?
Yeah.
Yeah, give me one of those, like, green ones.
Yeah, like the...
I was just about to ask, do we want home, road, alternate?
Yeah,
okay,
that'd be,
toxic green jersey.
Yeah, toxic green jersey. My big, dumb red face would look great on the camera with that toxic green jersey.
Christmas time, too?
Really yes, you'd look kind of like a Christmas tree.
Yeah. No, that's not a green... That's not a Christmas green.
You could make it work.
That's a green... What did you feed your kid green?
To answer your question about... respond to your statement that like, hey, he's probably going to play. Probably will, but I also think Sam Darnold. I think it has to go really bad there, and it might.
He's gonna get his face torn off.
But
playing in Seattle, I think
maybe not. I mean, I like his weapons. They talking about this kid that they drafted, Horton. I think that looks really good, and you know, Cooper Kupp's there. He'll still get open, and JSN is.
Yeah,
he's darn good.
I'm just not sure they are going to be able to keep him upright, but
yeah, maybe not.
You know,
maybe not.
Who knows?
And he definitely does not have Kevin O'Connell.
And I'm definitely someone who would be forcing the Jalen Milroe agenda.
You, okay.
I had a bet with Mike that he would be a top 10 pick. Right? Was it top 10? I think it was top 10.
I think maybe when he comes back.
I think the bet was top 15.
Top 15?
But you were pretty bullish there for a while.
I was pretty bullish there for a while, yeah.
It didn't work.
It didn't happen.
That story's not over yet.
Though. No.
Yeah.
No, I think he's got every chance to be the best quarterback out of that draft still, I think.
So, I mean, you know, talking about quarterbacks, you know, there's a preseason game coming up. Is there a real competition between Trubisky and Mike White?
Hope so.
I would hope so, too. I think Trubisky's...
I don't want to see Trubisky throw a pass that matters ever again in my life.
Yeah.
In a Bills uniform. I just don't... I have zero faith in him.
I will say...
I mean, zero.
If a guy like Anthony Richardson all of a sudden loses that job in Indianapolis, I'm all over that. What do you want, a seventh, sixth, seventh round pick? Could you imagine Richardson if – because here's the thing.
I'm lining him up in the backfield on these quarterback sneaks, or I'm lining him up under center with Allen.
Next
and
to Allen.
Or whatever.
Yes.
Like, oh, my God.
100%.
That's been my idea. It moved. Yeah, no, yeah. That's hot.
Yeah.
That's
I love that idea because it's better than, and no offense to Shane Bichel, but when I was at training camp, I know you haven't been there in a few years, but I saw Shane Bichel at training camp and I was like, I did one of those like the Josh Allen thing.
Now watch your tone when you're talking about Bichel.
Looking at who's that in the back of the jersey? Shane Bichel looks like a punter. Like, I was like, I'm bigger than he is. I could have.
Oh, yeah.
And then obviously I got out in the field.
Guy catches one field goal snap. And now he wants to replace the Bills' fourth quarterback.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys saw
that. Congratulations to you. That was well done. Good of Reed Ferguson to be a good sport about it.
It's been a big week for me.
Yeah.
It's been a big.
Well, good.
And you know what?
Why? What else happened? Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So
you won some golf thing.
Here's how the story goes, by the way. So, you know, he went on a podcast, same one I go on, and he was like, hey, stop ducking me. I'm coming for you this year. So I'm on. I got Marino and I got Prohaska on with me, and they're both looking at me. You know, Marino's looking over my shoulder. I'm like, what are you guys talking? And it's just Reed with a ball. He's like, there's a field right here. And I was like, yeah, you know, but I would really rather do it out in front of everyone. I want everyone to see it. And he was like, all right, man, whatever, you know. And I was like, all right, let me go to break. So we broke early. I ran out there. And he gave me, I said, don't take it easy. I don't want a lofter. I want your snap to the long.
He spun it. Yeah.
Like I said.
It was money.
It's like riding a bike.
And no gloves.
Gloves.
Do holders wear gloves?
No.
No, they don't, do they?
No.
Why?
You gotta have the feel.
Yeah.
You gotta have the feel, you know? And apparently also, which I didn't know, is long snappers, the way they hold the ball, they can get it back to the holder so that they literally just have to do this. The laces are already out. But I just wanted to show people that I had the wherewithal.
You did spin it. Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did a good job. All right, he's Nate Geary, and for Mike, I'm the Bulldog. This is WGR.